Program Miller.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and a sergeant at arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is our one Senator Gary Kubley, and then remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Did you have trouble reading my name?
Wasn't it Gary Kubley?
You have trouble with those new names, huh? Shall we pray? Creator God and indwelling Spirit, here we are and finding ourselves in this occupation, O God. It seems there is an undertow, or that is an unspoken expectation, that we are not to express our emotions, especially the negative ones and maybe those that we see as being tender. And yet you call us to be human, and being human means having emotions, having feelings that bubble to the surface from time to time. Help us to know that feelings in and of themselves are not just good or bad, Lord. They're just part of who we're created to be. We do need to experience these things, don't we? Can you aid us in seeing our task is not to avoid our emotions, even when they're painful? We will never be able to transform those emotions if we are unwilling to go through them with some authenticity. Doesn't sadness or anger or fear have to be experienced in order to be transcended? Can any situation be transcended before we have accepted it as it really is, Lord? So help us to remain true to all of the pieces that make us human, to the end that we may become more and more what you have created us to be. In your strong name, amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks, Fred. Secretary will take the roll.
Thanks for the note.
You bet.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubley, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Waugh, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Parisot, Pogemiller, Pretner, Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhug, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Wieger.
Quorum is present. We have executive and official communications to be read at the desk.
The Honorable James Metzen, President of the Senate. Dear President Metzen, I have vetoed and am returning Senate File 2688, the bill removing some independent contractors from the law defining independent contractor status for the trucking industry. Senator Pogemiller.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that Senate File 2688 and the veto message thereon be laid on the table.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of three members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House to the following Senate file, 2369, a bill for an act relating to education requiring criminal history background checks. There has been appointed as such committee on the part of the House Representatives Bigham, Peterson S., and Detmer. Senate file 2369 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of five members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House to the following Senate File 2822, a bill for enacting new insurance providing for penalties and attorney fees for certain insurance claims practices. There has been appointed as such committee on the part of the House Representatives Atkins, Smith, Morrow, Hillstrom, and Lilly. Senate File 2822 is herewith returned to the Senate. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of three members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House to the following Senate File. Senate File 2909, a bill for an act relating to landlord and tenant, modifying right of tenant to pay utility bills. There has been appointed as such committee on the part of the House Representatives Gunther, Mullery, and Tilbury. Senate File 2902 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. Is that all of them?
Yep.
Three?
Can lay the next one on the table?
No, we'll do the urgency. Well, after we'll go to first reading.
First reading of House bills. Let's read the message.
Message on House File 1812. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted. House File 1812, a bill for an act relating to financing, organization, and operation of state government. Signed, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Mr. President.
Yeah, you want to?
I'd move that the message, House File 1812, be laid on the table.
Hot. Okay. Okay, first reading before that motion, okay. I guess.
House File 1812, a bill for an act relating to the financing, organization, and operation of state government, providing for programs in education, early childhood education, etc.
First reading. Senator, now Senator Pogramiller.
I'd move that House File 1812 be laid on the table.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Are there any reports?
The next order of business is motions and resolutions. There are about three authors' motions. Without objection, we'll take them as one motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. There's a couple of resolutions on today printed on today's agenda. Without objection, they will be referred to the Rules Committee. Next, we have continuing on motions. We have a motion by Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 3375. Number 28 on general orders be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations and Oversight.
Okay, this is your bill, and you've talked to the chairs of the committees. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Without objection, we'll take the Senate bill introductions. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. Okay, you want to go to the calendar? There are four bills on the calendar. Again, I might note that there will be votes here and be kind of in rapid order. The first bill on the Senate calendar for Monday, April 7th, will be number one on the calendar, House File 3220. This is a Vickerman bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File 3220, a bill for an act relating to local government authorizing political subdivisions to make grants to nonprofit organizations.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators, have you voted? Desire to vote? A Secretary will take the roll. There being 56. Secretary, close the roll. There being 55 ayes, 5 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill, number 2 on the calendar, is House Bill 1499. This is a Scheid bill. The Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File 1499, a bill for an act relating to commerce, enacting the Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act, approved and recommended by the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws.
Secretary, take the roll. Is that the finance bill? All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There'll be 60 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. The number 3 on the calendar, the House File 3516. This is a Senator Rest bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File 3516, a bill for an act relating to real property, providing specification of certain information about a premises subject to foreclosure.
Secretary, take the roll. Secretary, will close the roll. There being 60 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on the calendar, number 4 on the calendar, Senate File 3813, Senator Cohn.
Mr. President, I believe I would like to ask for progress on
this bill. Yeah, progress request. Requested progress granted. Are we going to the committee of the whole? Do you have a motion?
Mr. President, under motions.
Okay. Senator Pogamiller.
Members, there's going to be a series of motions now to suspend the rules, declare an urgency, and take up House File 1812, which is the House Finance Bill. Senator Cohen will then make a motion to put the Senate language into the House Finance Bill, and then we'll take final passage on that and send it back to the House. So, Mr. President, I move that an urgency be declared within the meaning of Article 4, Section 19 of the Constitution of Minnesota with respect to House File 1812, and that the rules of the Senate be so far suspended as to give House File 1812 its second and third reading and place it on its final passage.
Okay, I'm told the first motion is to take it from the table.
I would move that House File 1812 be taken from the table.
On the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
And then, Mr. President, I'd renew my motion on the urgency.
Okay, on that motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator, second reading.
House File 1812.
Second reading. Senator Cohn.
Okay, Mr. President, first I think I would move to delete everything after the enacting clause and delete the title and insert the language after the enacting clause of Senate File 3813, the first engrossment, I believe.
That's correct. On that, that puts our language into the bill. That's the Cohn motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Further discussions?
We got 30 reading already.
Senator Cohn.
Well, Mr. President and members, let me ask you to pay attention to this. This is the supplemental finance bill that we had discussion on last Thursday, and this would be the final vote. Members might recall that we did not vote on the bill. We voted on the bill, but we had a voice vote on general orders to pass the bill. So this is the bill that we have in front of us. I just want to make a couple of comments before we vote. First, I did not get the opportunity, and the staff is not on the floor, but you put together an effort like this, and it can't be done very easily. And so certainly I want to thank my staff, Jane Gelman and Kim Babine, who worked very, very hard with the divisions in putting this bill together. Obviously, the chief fiscal analyst for the Senate, Matt Mossman, who did spectacular work. I haven't been able to do anything around this building for years without the support of my counsel, Peter Watson, but that's pretty much true of the entire state Senate. And then obviously all the fiscal analysts as well. You don't put together an effort like this without the staff of fiscal analysts we have working under the direction of Matt. So I want to thank everybody who was responsible for this effort. Having said that, Mr. President, this is a difficult bill. And this is a bill that, as I indicated on Thursday, I'm not particularly happy about. In a more perfect world, I would write a more perfect bill. But it's not a perfect world for us. On the other hand, we do have a constitutional obligation. And if you look at the state constitution, there are not many things that are required of us as state senators. We do not have to pass constitutionally any number of pieces of legislation that are in front of us. We do have the constitutional obligation to balance the state budget. Senator Bach and I have talked about this frequently during the session as we've met to discuss how to handle our respective bills, that this is the constitutional obligation of the Minnesota legislature this year to balance the state budget. And in difficult times, that's what this bill does. It balances the budget. It does not do so in a way that's going to be to the satisfaction of any one of the 67 of us. But it does do so in a way that I think works for the state of Minnesota, works for our constituencies, and works for what we have to provide for the state of Minnesota. As I indicated on Thursday, I don't ascribe blame to anybody for the situation.
All right, let's listen up. Senator Cohn.
Thank you, Mr. President. I don't ascribe blame to anybody for the situation we find ourselves in. As I mentioned on Thursday, the subprime crisis, the inability of oil to stabilize at a level that was projected through the February forecast, that's what brings us to where we are right now. We can talk about the need for revenues in the state budget. We can talk about a budget that doesn't work. But certainly in terms of the immediacy of where the national economy is something that is not to be blamed on anyone within the walls of this building. But having said that, we are faced to deal with the reality, and that is that we need to balance the budget. Members, as we vote on this, I don't mean to get too literary, but one of my favorite novels, I read it, I think, originally when I was in the fifth or sixth grade, is Dickens' A Tale of Two Cities. And it has, I think, one of the best opening paragraphs of any novel. Members might recall who've read it. It starts out, "It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. It was the winter of our despair, it was the spring of hope." And I think that kind of dichotomy is what is represented in this bill. There are many great things going on in the state of Minnesota, but we have the flip side this year of a difficult economy and a difficult budget. And I would ask members to exercise our constitutional obligation and vote for a bill that's not perfect, but a bill that's necessary, and vote for the supplemental finance bill. Thank you.
Discussion, Senator Robley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that this is a difficult bill to put together. It's never easy when there's a budget deficit, and we have to balance that budget out. And so, you know, I commend the division chairs for many of their efforts in this proposal. But I'm afraid that this proposal is setting us up for a very poor ending, because it has provisions in here that are going to be very difficult to negotiate. And I want to point out what some of the things that aren't in here. It's mostly what's not in here right now that is of concern to me and will make it difficult for us to resolve this bill and come to a a good ending of the session. It removes the JobSee program. It ends funding for ACHIEVE, which is a program that I feel very strongly about. Members, we just saw a report that said 38% of the students entering our Minnesota State colleges and universities have to take at least one remedial course. And the ACHIEVE program, which was strongly supported by the governor last year, was trying to remedy that by encouraging students to take courses in high school. And they would be rewarded for doing that with scholarship money that they could then later use when they went on to college. That provision is removed from this bill. The QComp program will be effectively halted from taking new school districts. There is a provision to allow current districts to continue, but it won't be growing anymore. Even before we have an evaluation done to see how effective it is. It cuts dozens of deputy and assistant commissioners, which allow the agencies and departments to do their work. It lacks the guarantee for the Republican convention. It cuts $10 million from veterans programs. These were all important initiatives that the governor had established, which is why I'm concerned about how this is all going to be worked out. And I know I expressed this concern in the Finance Committee, and one thing or two things did change, and I appreciate that we made that conciliatory effort on the positive alternative grants and the child care scholarship money. But all of these other things are still laying on the table unresolved, and I think that it's just going to, you know, it's kind of a poke in the eye to the governor, and I fear that we could have done better. We could have been negotiating sooner. We could have put together something perhaps that would move along more swiftly and with less acrimony. And so today I'm going to vote against this. Hopefully something can be done in conference committee, and we'll have a bill that can come back that we can all support. But right now I see a lot of trouble in the distant future, in the near future, as we try to resolve this, and I wish it wouldn't have been set up in such an adversarial way.
Discussion, Senator Corian.
Oh, thank you, Mr. President, and members of the Senate. I agree with a lot of the things that Senator Roebling just said. But I would just go back to the bonding bill. I don't agree with everything that was in the bonding bill. And I don't know that I've, in the short 6 years that I've been here, I've found any bill that I agree with 100%. But I want to publicly thank Senator Cohen and Senator Berglund for something that is extremely important to me, and the positive alternative grants were fully restored to the full amount. And so I said that if that was restored to full funding, I would vote for this bill, and I will be voting for this bill. I think it's important to move forward to try to fix the problem that we have here in this state as far as the budget is concerned, and I certainly don't want to be known as an obstructionist. I want to try to be part of the solution, and I'm hoping that in conference committee that this bill will be be better when it comes out of conference committee. So I wanted to just publicly thank the finance chair and Senator Berglund. Thank you.
Further discussion on the bill, Senator Cohen.
Mr. President, I appreciate the comments of both Senator Roebling and Senator Corian. I do want to offer just a couple of a correction and a couple of comments relative to what Senator Roebling said. First of all, JobSee is not in this bill. That's a provision in the tax bill. And so it's nothing to do with the bill in front of us. Second, you've suggested that this was meant to be a poke in the eye at the governor, and you then cited four additional concerns. I certainly disagree with your comments relative to the Republican convention. As pointed out on the floor Thursday, we presented a bill to the governor with $39 million for the Republican convention last year, and he vetoed the bill. Arguably he vetoed it for other reasons, but he still vetoed the bill. And as I mentioned, as somebody who's been to a couple of these conventions, the corporate money at either of these conventions, Democratic convention or Republican convention, as such, that I've always wondered why there had to be a request made to the host committee for public dollars for these efforts. And I suggested the same to the city of St. Paul before there was any decision as to whether or not it was going to be the Democratic convention or the Republican convention coming to St. Paul, or neither. But when St. Paul was pursuing both conventions, I raised some of those questions privately with the city folks as to whether or not there'd be the ability in difficult budget times to provide that kind of general fund dollar. So that's not meant to be a poke at the governor. That's a question I have just relative to why we have to provide public dollars for these efforts, given the kind of corporate money that will be flowing in to the Twin Cities with the Republican convention. And I would agree with Senator Pappas that we welcome the Republican convention to St. Paul. It'll be an exciting time, and it'll be exciting not just for the people who are inside the Xcel Energy Center participating, but for a lot of us who enjoy politics, who like what's going on, and like to observe this. So that's not meant to be anything directed at the governor. I do have some concerns, however, where the governor kind of lays down markers and says, you can't touch any of my stuff, but we're going to take everything else. We keep anything I want inviolate from any of the budget efforts. And I think what happened, particularly with QComp, which I think is not a bad program, but when we took a look at some of the educational needs and the complaints we've been hearing from everybody's school district, I have to believe that there's not a person sitting on the floor, rural, metro, urban, suburban, Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal, who's not heard from his or her school districts about the problems they're having. And so I'm not sure if Senator Stumpf is here or not, but Senator Stumpf can talk to you at greater length about why there was an effort made to provide some supplemental support to the entirety of the school districts, and it did come at the expense of the QComp program, a newer program, in an effort to provide more equity throughout the state. Certainly, as I've indicated, we can complain about the bill. I'll mention relative to the Achieve program, which in a perfect world, I like. And I think in a perfect world, Achieve would be a great thing to do. But as I indicated both a couple minutes ago today and as I indicated on Thursday, it's not a perfect world. And what Senator Pappas attempted to do with the higher education part of the bill was to make minimal cuts to higher education, to make sure that tuition did not increase. Keep in mind, the governor made cuts of something like $55 million to the systems. Approximately, Senator Pappas, I believe, $27 million to each system. We have a cut of $5 million to each system. Now, in order to affect that, we had to make some tough choices. And certainly, whether or not we try to maintain the systems, try to keep tuition increases to a bare minimum, try to make sure that the extra money in the grant program stays there to cover some of the tuition increases, we felt was at a higher priority than the maintenance of a totally new program. Again, a perfect world, the totally new program remains there. But this is not, as I've said repeatedly, a perfect world. And that's why we had to make some difficult choices, not in an effort to get the governor, not in an effort to get senators on the floor who have spoken favorably about those programs. I've spoken favorably about those programs. But it's a difficult year, it's a difficult budget, and that's why we're trying to make sure we maintain what's in the budget. Now, to the extent that there were other appropriations, and to be blunt, appropriations of a smaller nature, such as the positive alternatives, Senator Berglund, in putting together a very, very difficult budget, and I'm not going to take the time of members on the floor to talk about the hours Senator Berglund and I have spent over the last several months agonizing over the cuts in the human services portion of the budget, but she was trying to look for money everywhere, and she thought, well, and I think, Senator Berglund, you would agree that one of your last cuts, when you were trying to put together a bill and kind of nickel-dime your way to what we needed to do in your division, you thought, well, let's try to maintain most of positive alternatives or, you know, half the funding and see if that would work. And I heard certainly from a number of members that that did not work. That was a little bit easier to deal with because, in all honesty, that was a $1.2 million cut that I worked along with Senator Berglund to provide in the bill we had on Thursday through the amendment I had at the outset. A little bit tougher when you talk about $40 million for some of the other programs. So, Senator Roebling, this is not meant to take aim at the governor. This is meant to try to accomplish our constitutional obligation, balance the budget.
Further discussion, Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate Senator Cohen's continued defense of this bill and also his reference to a perfect world. I don't think we're looking for a perfect world, but I do think that by the end of this session, we should be looking for a responsible world, a responsible budget. And I say that, Mr. President, because we're putting off the hard decisions. We're using the reserve, we're using the cash flow, we're using one-time money, and Senator Cohen knows this. He's got a tough job next year. Being the finance chair next year is going to be even more difficult. And so we can talk about protecting college students from higher tuition. We can talk about protecting our health care programs, our nursing homes, our schools. But they should all be incredibly nervous. This budget is a red flag saying we might be able to patch something together this year, but wait till the deficit of next year.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. President, we ask for a call of the Senate.
The Senate's under call.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings on the call be dispensed with and Sergeant Arms be instructed to bring in the absentees.
On the motion, all in favor? Signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Secretary, give the bill its third reading.
House File 1812, a bill for an act relating to financing, organization, and operation of state government.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. The secretary will close the roll. There being 40 ayes and 25 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Cohen, do you have a motion to make, Senator Cohen?
Mr. President, I move that Senate File 3813 be laid on the table.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President.
General orders, bills. I've got one up there. I think that's where we're going right now. So,
Mr. President.
Senator Pogamiller.
Just wanted to clarify, the Cohen motion was to strike it from the calendar and lay it on the table. Okay. Mr. President.
Senator Pogamiller, that's what the front desk understood the motion to be.
Okay. Mr. President, remaining on orders of business of motions and resolutions, I move that the Senate take up the general orders calendar.
Senator Pogamiller has moved to take up the general orders calendar. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. President, I move the Senate do now resolve itself in a committee of the whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On Senator Pogamiller's motion, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to designate the 7 bills on general orders number 1 for consideration, and I would yield to Senator Latz.
The Senate has before it now number 69 on the general orders calendar, Senate file 3139. I recognize Senator Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I move that when this committee do arise, that it recommend Senate file 3139 to pass.
Senator Latz, on that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This bill has become affectionately known as the Hannah Montana bill. You may recall that when Hannah Montana or Miley Cyrus came into town for a concert, that it was virtually impossible for the average member of the public to get a ticket. That's because many ticket brokers, particularly online ticket brokers, had been using software to basically jump to the front of the ticket line and to scarf up all of the tickets within minutes of them going on sale online. This bill would address that problem and make it once again, hopefully, possible for average members of the general public to purchase tickets. The bill creates a misdemeanor for intentionally using software to circumvent a ticket seller's website, security measure, access control system, or a controller measure used to ensure the equitable ticket buying process. The bill bans the use of software primarily designed or produced for the purpose of interfering with ticket sale operations. I might ask for your support. I refer you to a copy of a Star Tribune editorial in support of the bill, which is on your desks, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Is there discussion on Senate File 3139? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank Senator Latz for bringing this bill forward. I'm the great uncle to a 5-year-old who is a big, big fan of Hannah Montana, Miley Cyrus, and I was, even though I supported the Gerlach bill last year, got in a lot of trouble, and I still support the Gerlach bill, but think some common sense provisions for circumstances like this are well warranted. So I was in pretty big trouble when she couldn't get tickets to that concert, so I encourage a green vote. Thank you.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 3139? There being no further discussion, Senator Latz has moved that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3139 be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the bill be recommended to pass. The committee has before it now number 45 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 3218. The chair recognizes Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3218 be recommended to pass.
Senator Bach, on that motion.
Members, Senate File 3218 are the recommendations for the Workers' Comp Advisory Council. Many of you are aware in 1992 we put an advisory council to review workers' compensation changes. And they annually have to make recommendations to the legislature on proposed changes to Minnesota's workers' comp law. The council is made up of 12 members, 6 from the business community, 6 from the labor community, and 4 non-voting legislators. This bill really makes a number of small technical changes. It's been several years since we've been able to get a bill out of the council and to the floor for passage. So there's a number of small technical changes. There's some obsolete references, some cross-referencing, but the real meat of the bill is a change in the weekly benefit that an injured worker can receive in lieu of wages. Under current law, an injured worker can receive up to 2/3 of their weekly salary, but there's a cap on that of $750 a week. This bill raises that cap to $850 a week, and it also increases the number of weeks that a person who's on temporary partial disability can receive benefits from currently 104 weeks to 130 weeks. Some other smaller financial changes in the bill, the qualified rehabilitation consultants, it increases their maximum hourly rate reimbursement from $88.06 to $91. It extends the period of time that a worker has to request retraining benefits from 156 weeks to 208 weeks. It has a provision in it that clarifies that if an individual, and this normally happens in border communities with another state, that if an individual is treated in another state, the reimbursement that that medical provider receives in the other state is the same reimbursement that is received, that they normally receive from the workers' comp system from the state that they're in. We remove some of the limitations on the provision in law where employers are able to self-insure workers' compensation as long as it's subjective to a collective bargaining agreement. The previous caps were $2 million of annual payroll for a group, $250,000 or premiums, $250,000 in annual premiums if it's one employer. And members, that's about that's the substantial portions of the bill. Both the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and the AFL-CIO support all of the provisions in the bill, but there is one provision in the bill that we need to delete, Mr. Chairman, because there is a fiscal note, Health and Human Services reminded us, so I'd like to offer the A2 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A2 amendment.
Senator Bach moves to amend Senate File 3218 as follows, page 3, line 35. This is Amendment A-2.
Senator Bach, on your amendment.
Mr. Chairman, there was a provision in the bill where, in the case of personal care attendants, if it turned out they were an independent contractor and were not under workers' compensation, there was a provision in the bill that required the workers' comp to be paid for by our Department of Health and Human Services, and they put a fiscal note on that, so that needs to be removed from the bill. Both the State Chamber of Commerce and the AFL-CIO support the amendment.
Is there discussion on the A2 amendment? There being no discussion, Senator Bach has moved adoption of the A2 amendment. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the amendment's adopted. Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'd appreciate your support on the bill.
Chair recognizes Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Bach, would you yield?
He will yield.
Senator Bach, I appreciate the work done on this, and I know there's been a lot of compromise on both sides. And I'm wondering, there are some additional benefits in here, and I don't know if this is going to have an effect on employer premiums or not. Or will it have an effect on the workers' comp special fund? Because I know there's several bills floating around that might tap into that fund, and I'm wondering if this is tapping into that fund, and then some of the other bills, the study for the asbestos for mine workers is tapping about $4.9 million out of that workers' comp special fund. So I'm just looking at where the additional benefits are coming from, if there's money in the various accounts now, or if the premiums are going to have to be raised, or if we're going to use the special fund.
Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, I have had a discussion with the Commissioner of Labor and Industry about those very issues, and what he has indicated to me that The insurance industry is a very competitive market right now, and they anticipate that there will not be increases in workers' compensation premiums as a result of the bill. For instance, on the provision where the number of weeks that an individual that currently qualifies for temporary partial disability, increasing that from 104 weeks to 130 weeks, the department tells me that that probably only affects about 30 cases per year. So I don't believe, and in the case of the increased benefits, there's a total of about 30,000 workers' comp claims a year, but there's only about 3,000 of them that actually the maximum benefit is paid out on. So the commissioner tells me that they don't anticipate any increases in workers' comp premiums as a result of the bill.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 3218? There being no further discussion, Senator Bach has moved that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3218 be recommended to pass. As many as are in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye. Opposed? The motion prevails and Senate File 3218 will be recommended to pass. The committee has before it now number 12 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 3378. The chair recognizes Senator Laurie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I recommend that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3378 be recommended to pass.
The committee has before it now House File 3662. I may have said Senate filed. But the House, the committee has before it now House File 3662. Senator Laurie has moved that when this committee to arise, House File 3362 be recommended to pass. Senator Laurie on that committee.
Is it a point of question here, Mr. Chair? Do we have the House language before us or the Senate language? They do.
Senate language. Senator Laurie, it's the House file with the Senate language in the House file. That is
okay.
Something that occurs administratively rather automatically.
Good enough, because I can describe the Senate language quite well. this is rather recently we gave county boards ability to appoint upon a vacancy for a county board position. And after a little bit of experience with this new policy, it became kind of evident that we probably ought to be requiring a bit of a public process be observed when a county board vacancy occurs to make sure that, number one, there's a public hearing held and the individuals from the district in which the vacancy occurred are consulted in the matter. And also, there was some significant questions as to the length of time. Initially, we had allowed an appointment process for a board vacancy with up to 2 years remaining. And so this bill does two things, really, for counties. It brings the time limit for an appointment process can only be utilized if there is 1 year remaining rather than the initial 2 years remaining, and it provides for that public process, not too onerous public process, but a little bit of a public process where the county board members that are still sitting consult with some of the residents affected by the vacancy and try to engage them a little bit in who is best suited to serve them. That's sections 1 and 2 of the bill. Sections 3 and 4 of the bill provide for similar requirements in regards to city vacancies. I would encourage members to support this provision and stand for any questions. Thank you.
Are there questions on House File 3662? Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Laurie, thanks for bringing this bill forward. I think the change from 2 years to 1 year is significant and very important to have done. And so I really appreciate this. But Senator Laurie, I have the A50 amendment to make it even better. So I'd like to offer the A50 amendment.
The Secretary report the A50 amendment.
Senator Wergen moves to amend House File 3662 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate April 2nd as follows, page 2, lines 1 and 31. This is amendment A50.
Senator Wergen, on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senator Lori, this amendment just says that if the vacancy takes place with less than 90 days remaining in the retirement or the vacancy's term, that the vacancy stays open until the election. For one thing, it will save cities and counties a lot of money not to hold a special election with just 90 days remaining on a term. Secondly, there is the potential under this scenario of appointing to fill a vacancy that we fill a vacancy with our buddies and kind of make them a shoe-in for the next election. And I don't think that that's a good practice that we ever want to get into for elections. So this just says that if there is less than a 90-day vacancy, it simply stays open until the election. I don't think it does any harm to your bill at all. I think it actually helps cities and counties. It also, I think, makes for a little bit more fair election on the general election day rather than an appointment of a crony.
Senator Lori.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Wergen. This is the first I've seen this provision, and I guess my initial read is that it would be within the spirit of what we're trying to get done. I do know that the House file is a little bit different than the Senate file, and we will need to conference them, so that will give us some time to review this language and run it by the counties. I haven't talked to anybody about the provision. I don't have any particular trouble with it myself, but would like to make sure that I have that time to consult with counties and see what their thoughts are in this matter and other stakeholders. It's certainly the people affected. I know that the appointment process that I'm talking about occurred in my county, and it left a lot of the people who are represented by this appointed position feeling very, very disenfranchised about the process in which the person was selected. The person themselves is a very good public servant, and I think everybody would agree to that, but it's a very core tenet of our democracy that those represented get to choose their representatives. And so this here is I will support this amendment at this point.
Senator Wergen?
Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Lori. I appreciate your being open to that, because I think we have exactly the same goal in mind, and that making sure we have a fair process for newly elected folks.
Is there further discussion on the A50 amendment? There being no further discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of adopting the A50 amendment indicate by saying aye. Opposed? It's nay. The motion prevails and the amendment's adopted. Further discussion on House File 3662. There being no further discussion, Senator Lori moves that when this committee do arise, House File 3662 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and House File 3662 will be recommended to pass. The committee has before it now number 79 on the general orders calendar, House File 3138. Chair recognizes Senator Metzen.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that House File 3662 be recommended to pass.
Senator Metzen on that motion.
Chairman, members of the committee, this is the state labor contracts ratification bill that's been worked on for about the last 6 to 9 months. It ratifies labor contracts and compensation plans for employees in the executive branch. This bill was heard in the LCC, the Legislative Coordinating Commission Subcommittee on Employee Relations. Senator Betzel's on this committee, Senator Jen Olson, Senator Scheid, and the secretary is Senator Wergen. Go through, if you'd like, the bill is around 3.25% salary increases. There's some lane changes in some of the divisions, but Subdivision 1 deals with AFSCME Council 5's contract at 16,200 clerical workers and technical employees in this area. Subdivision 2 is an association of professional employees, which covers about 11,500 employees. AFSCME Council 5 is next to Unit 8. This is about 1,900 folks in the corrections area. Now the next section deals with the console 5 of AFSCME, unit 225. This is about 70 radio communication officers. Subdivision 5, the next one, subdivision 5, State Residential Schools Education Association contract covers about 180 teachers. The next one deals with Minnesota Government Engineers. There's about 900 in this category. Subdivision 7 deals with the Middle Management Association, about 2,700 employees. State Board of Investment Salary Administration Plan is in here. This is a relatively new language. Subdivision, the next one is the Commissioner's Plan. There's about 1,100 unrepresented employees in this section. Obviously, this is money under the what we appropriated last session. We're not asking for new money today. There is a provision I'm going to make you aware of. This allows for the director at the Minnesota Zoo to be paid, if you will, some extra salary benefits from the Zoo Foundation. This is not the state money. What happens is we did a study of 18 zoos in the United States, and we're the 17th lowest paid zoo director in the nation. And we've got a great director, Mr. Emke, and I was convinced, and the members of the subcommittee and the full finance committee, I believe, are in agreement with me that I think it's only Fort Worth, Texas, is the only zoo and the major zoos that are paying less than we are. So that effectively is the bill. I didn't negotiate it. It was executive branch that negotiated it. So if you're not happy with it, take it up with those people. But we ratified it in a couple different committees, and so I would hope we all endorse this plan.
Members, when the explanation of the bill began, we had not changed the House file on the board yet. This is House File 3138 that Senator Metzen just explained. And there is an unofficial engrossment at your desk if you'd like to see an unofficial engrossment of the bill.
You're moving House File 3138.
Yeah, this is moving House File 3138. Is that correct?
Senator Metzen, that's correct. Is there discussion on House File 3138? There being no discussion, Senator Metzen has moved that when this committee do arise, House File 3138 be recommended to pass. As many as in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the bill will be recommended to pass. The committee has before it now number 4 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 2605, Senator Salzman.
Mr. Chair, and I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File number 2605 be recommended to pass.
Senator Salzman, on that
Thank
motion.
You, Mr. Chair. This is a bill that deals with the Metropolitan Council, and we've had some very spirited debate in this chamber about an elected Met Council. And this is a more modest and incremental change in that it calls for staggered terms, something that was in place until 1994 and served this area very well. This proposal really came out of a meeting that was held last June with a number of elected officials and representatives from around the area to talk about the Metropolitan Council and what changes might be suggested to really address some of the concerns that have been expressed. Now, again, this is not an elected Met Council, but it's staggered terms. It is something that creates stability, creates continuity, which are two good things, and it's also a bipartisan bill. I have support from people from both sides of the island. This, you do have a handout from the Metro Cities, and it meets with many of the city's needs of the fact that council folks who are appointed by the governor, continue to be appointed by the governor, would then be able to continue past the governor's term. Also on the back of that sheet, it has the calendar for how this would work. It would start in January of 2009, and after a census, obviously there are changes in the district, and that would be accommodated as well. So I stand for questions, and I would really appreciate your support.
Is there discussion on Senate File 2605? There being no discussion, Senator Saltzman has moved that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2605 be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the bill will be recommended to pass. The committee has before it now number 54 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 3758. The chair recognizes Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise at Senate File 3758 be recommended to pass.
Senator Dahl on that motion.
Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment as well. I'd like to the A9 amendment, I'd like to offer right away to clarify or address a couple of small changes in the bill.
Secretary, report the A9 amendment.
Senator Dahl moves to amend Senate File 3758 as follows, page 4, line 34. This is amendment A-9.
Mr. Chair, I'll just explain.
Senator
it's
Dahl
just
on the amendment.
Changing the word from the to A in a couple of lines to reference not just that it's a specific to a particular utility, but this applies to all utilities of renewable energy, or it would be dealing with renewable energy. And it inserts an effective date that would be effective following the final enactment that was missing prior to that.
Okay. Is there discussion on the A9 amendment? There being no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of adopting the A9 amendment indicate by saying aye. Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this bill 3758 was brought to me by the utilities that are working hard to satisfy the renewable energy standard that we passed last year, and it seeks to help recover some costs on a more timely basis as the transmission lines are being developed across the state, and changes some language within the legislation that we have in place now so as to address the renewable energy standard as well as the renewable energy objectives that we have already currently in statute. And finally, it addresses more of a what we call a mini certificate of need when we're dealing with renewable energy projects. They wanted to have a little more streamlined approach so that we could keep these projects moving ahead on as quickly as possible. Everything will still go through the PUC and the Department of Commerce to get approved, but it would just streamline that process. I ask for your support, and I stand for any questions.
The chair recognizes Senator Dill.
Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman, I have the A50 amendment.
The secretary would report the A50 amendment.
Senator Dill moves to amend Senate File 3758 as follows, page 3 after line 24, insert. This is amendment A50.
Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, members, this amendment repeals a prohibition on building nuclear power plants in the state of Minnesota. And it reads this way. We're deleting the language that says nuclear power plant, new construction prohibited. And we're deleting the language, the commission may not issue a certificate of need for the construction of a new nuclear-powered electric generating plant. And I'd like to right off the bat, Mr. Chairman, I ask for a roll call vote before I explain the reason for this any further.
Well, are there three hands? There are three hands. There will be a roll call vote. Senator Betzel, what's your point?
Mr. Chairman, I question the germaneness of this amendment. From what I can see from Senate File 3758, it seems to be a technical changes to the energy bill to reconcile it with federal law. this has a would be a substantially different purpose of the underlying bill. So under Rule 35, I would urge that the amendment is not germane.
Advice for the chair?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it's exactly the same chapter of law. My amendment deals with exactly the same chapter of law as the bill does. And, of course, you need transmission lines to transport nuclear power, and it's all tied together in Chapter 216B.16 and 216B.243. All of these sections that are in the bill are surrounding the section that deals with my amendment, which is 216B.243, subdivision 3B. And I can't see how it could not be germane, because it's in the same chapter. It deals with the Public Utilities Commission. It deals with transmission of electricity. And if it's not germane here, I don't know where it would be germane.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator just Betzel. Because it's in the same chapter doesn't mean that that makes it germane. Under the Senate rules of germaneness, if a proposed amendment is either a different subject or a different purpose, either one of those, it fails. So even if you could argue that somehow being under the same chapter, it might be the same subject, if it has a different purpose, it would fail. The underlying bill deals with transmission lines. This deals with nuclear waste, storage of nuclear fuel. Nuclear fuel and transmission lines are way different things. The underlying bill is a very narrow bill. It's a technical bill to conform with federal law. This is a substantially different purpose, and so I would urge that it is not germane.
Chair recognizes Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would argue that the bill is germane. And I argue that on a couple different factors, but Senator Betzel made the best argument for being germane that anybody could. He misclassifies what Senator Dahl's bill is all about. If you look through his bill, there are several sections there. It's not just about transmission. There's issues in there about cost recovery right on down the line. There's issues in there on renewable. Now, it's a pretty broad bill. And what we're talking about here is not the storage of nuclear waste. That's not what Senator Dill's amendment is about. It's about letting utilities in the state of Minnesota plan in a reasonable manner on which choice of fuel is going to power the electricity in the state of Minnesota. It's not about, his amendment's not about the storage of high-level nuclear waste. It's about making sure that the state of Minnesota has options. Now, we went through this the other day. There's nothing wrong with planning. I think that Senator Dill has a good amendment. I do believe that it is appropriate for this bill, and we should vote on it.
Chair recognizes Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Is it Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Thank you. I would argue this is a completely different subject in this bill and the amendment. With all due respect, Senator Murphy, the issue, this is not an omnibus energy policy bill. It is a bill that changes some transmission rules or transmission cost recovery and some provisions related to renewable energy. And the amendment is a policy question about nuclear power. And there's nothing in the bill, the underlying bill, that deals with nuclear power at all. And so it's a substantive policy question. It's certainly the subject of a policy bill that I believe is probably in Senator Pretner Solon's committee. But it's not the same subject of this bill by any stretch of the imagination, so it's not germane.
Chair recognizes Senator Youngbauer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will argue that it is, again, totally germane. The whole substance of this bill only starts from the aspect of renewable energy and the reduction of greenhouse gases, which, of course, nuclear has none of these substances, and it brings it all back into the whole same discussion. And
over lots of testimony, the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group was brought into much of the testimony that pertains to this bill in terms of committee. So it certainly is germane on many, many fronts in terms of where it deals with in chapter, what is the underlying reason for the renewable energy, the whole climate change issue. It's certainly germane.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If Senator Jungbauer's arguments were held sway, then you know any subject dealing with greenhouse gases or climate change would cause the building of new nuclear power plants the subject of a germane amendment. You know, maybe a transit bill, a transportation finance bill, would be germane, or planting trees, or peat bog mining, or something of the sort. This bill is very simple. It deals with some cost recovery for transmission. It has to do with some policy around the renewable energy standard. So it's not germane, but it's also not appropriate. This is a major question that would confront this state and this chamber. I'm not aware that this subject has been corked up or bottled up in any way. It's been articulated in the MCAG group. It's under active discussion. I think there's an intent among many parties to have a full-fledged, full-ranging debate about the appropriateness of pursuing nuclear power as a future energy option. So to just bring this forward in the form of an amendment to an unrelated bill, I think, is not only germane, it's not appropriate.
Senator Worgen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would suggest that this is absolutely germane. This bill deals with everything from green energy in the form of windmills. It deals with coal generation. It deals with nuclear generation because, members, this bill deals with transmission lines, and you'd need transmission lines for all of it. So if you want a bridge, members, here's your bridge. Transmission lines apply to all energy, including nuclear, and so this is a very pertinent amendment. We're dealing with energy. Nuclear power has to be discussed right here on the floor, and Mr. Chair, I would urge that you rule this germane because it certainly is.
Members, I'm about ready to make a ruling, but Senator Jungbauer, you want to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, one more thing. I did want to comment on Senator Dibble's comment because I did say specifically same chapter of law. Everything else he was speaking of does not exist under that chapter of law, members.
Members, an amendment is not germane just because it is in the same section of the law. I want to make that that statement to begin with. But reading the title of the bill, is Modifying Provisions Relating to Power Transmission Lines, Renewable Energy Obligations, and Related Activities and Costs. And I'm looking at the germaneness rule, and a non-germane amendment includes one that relates to a substantially different subject. This is certainly a same subject. Or is intended to accomplish a substantially different purpose. And I think the amendment is intended to accomplish a substantially different purpose. So I'm going to rule it is not germane.
Mr. Chair, I would appeal the ruling of the chair.
Senator Worgen has moved an appeal of the ruling. Shall the decision of the chair be the ruling on the amendment? So a green vote upholds the ruling of the chair. The roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll. Three hands. Yeah, there's three hands. Thank you. All members voting who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 41 ayes, 21 nays, the ruling of the chair is sustained. Senator Dahl, on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would renew my motion that this be Senate file be recommended to pass.
Further discussion on Senate file 3758. Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dahl, I have some concerns about this bill. I realize that it passed through the process relatively unquestioned, if you will. But I think it has far greater implications than what is indicated by the surface chat of the bill, if you will. For one thing, this bill goes into whether or not you need a certificate of need when you're doing the renewable energy standards requirements. In other words, if you're going to put up a windmill, you no longer need a certificate of need. Is that correct under this bill?
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair and Senator Wergen, no, it's not that you don't need a certificate of need. It's a streamlined process. When I guess we call it a mini certificate of need when it addresses renewable energy projects. But you're still going to have certificate of need for all other energy projects that are out there. This one is just streamlining that process specifically for that subset.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dahl, if you'll indulge me, I have a little bit further to go with that. I realize it streamlines the process, but if you put up renewable energy in a location where there aren't enough transmission lines to handle what's there, which is happening, then you have to run transmission lines so that they tie in with the grid where the rest of the electricity is running through the grid, okay? And what this says is that the utilities would no longer have to have a rate case for transmission lines. So if you put up wind energy, you take a transmission line, you tie it into the main grid, and then all of a sudden that grid does not handle all of the power that needs to be put on it, and so that transmission line has to be enlarged, if you will. And all of a sudden, we're doing transmission lines everywhere with no rate case for the recovery because the renewable energy ties into the grid, and you've created a need as a result of the renewable energy to increase the size of the standard grid. And so we're releasing from a rate case some pretty significant things. And I don't think that, and maybe you have. If you have, correct me if I'm wrong. But I don't think that's been thought through where these transmission lines tie into and create a need. And then there is no rate case. And if there's no rate case, by the way, members, that means it gets passed on to your electric bill without being through a system of checks and balances at all. So all of a sudden it goes on the electric bill with no PUC oversight. Is that correct, Senator Dahl?
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair and Senator Wergen, my understanding is of how this works is that when a utility builds a section of transmission lines, the company that's investing in it may not be the only one benefiting from that transmission line. There may be several utilities in that area that are going to benefit to some degree. And MISO would make the determination as to whether or not, you know, what percentage of benefit they're receiving from that transmission line. And they could apply then that particular amount to the utility would have to get reimbursed for that part of the benefit they're receiving. Yes, then they could pass that on to the rate payer. Now, they're going to recover that cost regardless whether at the rate case, the hearing. Now, example that I'll be giving is, say, Xcel, the last time they had a rate case hearing, something like this, was about 10 or 13 years ago. And so in the meantime, they're also borrowing money that's also causing them to cost more for that time delay. This is providing for a more timely basis of recovering those costs. And there is a transfer, but the transfer is done on a basis where, regardless of when it happens, the ratepayers will get that, have to pay that additional. It's just that a matter of doing it on a more timely basis as these lines are being built.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Senator Dahl, if this has been an ongoing practice through MISO and through the RECB recovery process, and the utility companies have been exchanging dollars for transmission lines, which they do, I understand that, and there has not been a rate case in over 13 years, that must mean that in spite of these transfers back and forth, because the money travels both ways, that must mean that there has not been need for a rate case in spite of additions to transmission lines and in spite of the MISO rulings and the RECB payments. Okay, but now what you're saying is that they don't even need a rate case. Whether one is justified or not, they can simply do a cost recovery on everyone's electric bill. And so rate cases fly out of the window. And in a way, what we're doing here is turning the regulation of electric utility or regulation of utilities into a political legislative issue rather than into a quasi-judicial issue where there's politics that are not involved, where politics is not involved, but instead it's a process of true need being developed through a quasi-judicial body. And I think if we start doing some of these things here, we take that away. And even though we have a regulated utility, we have the regulatory power is not with the body that's supposed to be regulating it. It's here with a political legislative body. And I don't think it's a good idea. I think this allows the utility companies to slip costs onto the rate payers without going through a rate case in order to justify the money. And you just said yourself that they haven't needed one for 13 years, even though these costs have been passing back and forth. So they must not need them really often, and this allows them to just go forward and charge it off without a rate case. Senator Dahl, if they don't need a rate case, do they go through any approval process, even a mini approval process, using your words? Because I noticed that for cost recovery on ancillary services, there's still an approval process, even if not a full-blown rate case.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Wergen, the commissioner is still involved. The commission is still involved with all of this. And they may approve these mechanisms for automatic renewable adjustment of charges. And this is just another, provision where they would be able to approve that. It's not that they shall or they must, but that they may approve it. It's still going to go through the same checks and balances, as it were, to decide whether or not this was cost-effective for the ratepayer.
Senator Wergen.
Senator Dahl, no, it doesn't. It exempts them from a rate case, and to say that the PUC may approve doesn't have any bite whatsoever. It just says they may, but they don't have to. And the damage, if you will, is already done on the ratepayer's electric bill because the cost has been passed on without any scrutiny at all. That's way beyond even what the ancillary services have at this point in time, which is an approval process outside of a rate case. And so it simply says, well, the PUC can comment if they want to, but it doesn't mean a thing. It just gets passed on to the ratepayer.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, in Section 3, Subdivision 2, on cost recovery, we talk about just these issues, and it says on line 3.18, upon petition by a public utility, the Commission shall approve as modified a rate schedule providing for automatic adjustment of charges to recover expenses or costs approved by the Commission. So it's going through the same provisions as they would prior to this new language. It's simply adding a new avenue as far as new section as far as activities that are going on in the with transmission lines,
Mr.
to address
Chair?
That issue.
Mr. Chair?
Senator
Dahl, could you give me the page and line for that so that I can look at it with expediency?
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair and Senator Wergen, on page, it's page 3 of this bill, but it's section 3, subdivision 2, cost recovery. And it deals with this issue and also talks about, the this is under subdivision 1. It's been added as well. So that it will address those issues in terms of cost recovery. It still has to go through the same checks and balances that it would prior to this.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 3758? Senator Worgen.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, I don't believe it does what you're saying. I'm looking at Subdivision 1. Trying to do this very quickly. I'll let the question go for a minute because I have to read this.
So further discussion on Senate File 3758. There being no further discussion, Senator Dahl has moved that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3758 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the bill will be recommended to pass. The committee has before it now number 67 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 3360. The chair recognizes Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3360 be recommended to pass.
Senator Foley on that motion.
The bill is introduced, creates a misdemeanor for possession of any device or substance intended to enhance an animal's ability to fight. In the world of dog and cockfighting, there are a whole array of tools and drugs that are used to train these animals, especially for fighting. This language would allow officers to charge those individuals that they know trained animals for this activity. And there's no opposition that I know of. The Humane Society of Minnesota is supporting this.
Is there discussion on Senate File 3360? Chair recognizes Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, would the author, Senator Foley, yield?
He will yield.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Foley, could you give me some examples of possession of a device or substance that will enhance an animal's ability to fight?
Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Dill. I do have some photographs if you want to look at those. I don't have enough to pass out for each senator, but...
Mr. Chairman, Senator Foley, we're going to make it illegal, we're going to make it a misdemeanor to possess a device or substance that will enhance an animal's ability to fight. I'm just asking the question, what would be an example of a device or substance that you're now making illegal to possess?
Senator Foley.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dill, there's spears and various other devices that people that are involved in cockfighting and dogfighting know how they're used and how they're trained.
Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Foley, I heard you say something about, I believe it's something you can put on the talons of a rooster. I forgot what you called it. Is that what we're talking about? Is it a device that would be illegal to possess? Mr. Chairman, Senator Foley, I'm just trying to get an idea of what we're making illegal here. It's illegal to possess a device or substance that will enhance an animal's ability to fight.
Ms. Chair and Senator Dill, the various devices are drugs and syringes and needles, spurs that attach to the cock and the dogs.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Foley, I can understand a couple of things you just said, but to possess a syringe, I hope would not be a misdemeanor, because a syringe can be used for many other things besides administering drugs to these kinds of animals.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 3360? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Foley yield?
He will yield.
Senator Foley, looking at 117 through 119, it talks about a person who, number two there, actually one line 119, possesses any device or substance intended to enhance an animal's ability to fight. I'm not sure if a shock collar would be an example of that, but I guess that would be one question. I sit next to one that's interested in professional bull riding. Would the devices used there to enhance the bull's performance be a device that would qualify under this law? I think there are questions like that, I think, that we all have.
Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Sessions, I'm not certain that I understand what your question was.
Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. President, and Mr. Chair, I guess it is. Right. Mr. Chair and Senator Foley, on line 119, where it says, possesses any device, and the world is filled with devices. And some of those are substances, frankly, could enhance an animal's ability to fight. I suppose it could be a shock collar. I suppose it could be, as with professional bull riding, the device is used to enhance the bull. They call it the flank rope. If we don't have flank ropes, it's my understanding that we don't have bull riding. And there's probably a whole lot of other devices out there that might qualify here for different kinds of activities that we normally think of as okay within our society right now. But that definition there, and I go specifically to the word device, is that any device that one might conceive of?
Senator Foley.
Mr. Chair, it's obvious something that the individuals that deal with this know what to see and can evaluate what should be prohibited under this statute.
Mr. President, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dale.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to respond to Senator Senjum's comments about flank straps on bucking bulls. Since I'm a former bull rider, I'd just like to point out that the flank strap does make the bull buck, but it also distracts the bull after the rider is thrown off, so he continues to buck and he's not bucking only because he's bucking off the rider, because that would put the rider at much greater risk. As soon as the rider goes off the bull can turn on the rider and he doesn't have the distraction of the flank strap to keep on bucking.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 3360? There being no further discussion, Senator Foley has moved that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3360 be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the bill is recommended to pass. Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to designate General Orders number 2, but delete number 72. Senator Michelle does not want to take that up today, I guess. And then, but start with number 10, then 34, then 56. So three more bills. Number 10 on general orders, number 34, and number 56. And thank you.
Senator Pogamiller, looking at authors who are in the chamber, I think I'll take up number 34 first, Senator Scheid. The committee has before it now number 34 on general orders, Senate File 2930. The chair recognizes Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I move that when Senate File 2930, when this committee do arise, Senate File 2930 be recommended to pass.
Senator Scheid, on that motion.
Yes. Mr. Chairman and members, last year we passed legislation regulating debt management services, and that was the first time we had done that. It was new law. It needed some technical fixes, and that's what we've done with Senate File 2930. This has to do with the people who who help debtors deal with their creditors and negotiate perhaps a reduction in the amount ultimately owed. And it's where the debtor sends a monthly payment to that management service provider, that debtor, debt management service provider, and that's where they make their money. They take, they get something off that that payment. And so we drastically limited the framework for those debt management service providers. There were 8 licensed providers before we had this law, but there were over 1,200 credit counseling agencies that were operating across the country, and many of them were operating in Minnesota. So this was important legislation last year. As I said, we have some technical fixes. Excuse me. We needed to change the list of accreditation agencies or entities, because we know that there are, I think we only listed one last year, and we know that there are 3 at least that have accredited some of those service providers in Minnesota already. So we did not know that. Now we're correcting that. We are giving the department some flexibility in granting licenses, and then we're grandfathering in the Minnesota debt counselors that were licensed as of August 1, 2007, but didn't have and weren't required by last year's law to have accreditation. I do have an amendment, Mr. Chairman. The A1 amendment corrects the name of one of those entities.
The Secretary will report the A1 amendment.
Senator Scheid moves to amend Senate File 2930 as follows, page 1, line 11. This is Amendment A-1.
Senator Scheid, on your motion to amend.
Mr. Chairman, on that motion, the very first part of the bill, page 1, line 10 through 11, has to do with who is an accredited credit counseling provider. So we had only the Council on Accreditation last year. We have added 2 more entities, and we incorrectly named one of them. Actually, it was correct. It's just that they changed their name a few years ago, and we didn't know that. So the Department of Commerce informed me that we need to change the name of one of those. It's not a substantive change to the bill. The bill already has the 2 new providers in it.
So discussion on the A1 amendment. There being no discussion on the amendment, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of adopting the amendment indicate by saying aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the amendment's adopted. Senator Scheid.
And, Mr. Chairman, then I would appreciate members' support on what is a technical fix to... We did add an amendment, I should point out, from the original bill, although it is on members' computers. But in the Commerce Committee, we did... allow some leeway to the management, the debt management providers, in terms of when a debtor themselves asks to change the payment or asks to add somebody to the to their account, to that where they need help meeting their payments, that they may do that without written notice if it's upon the request of the debtor. And the other thing has to do with the payment increase, and if it's less than $10 or $20 for all of the creditors, there also does not have to be a signature. Sorry I didn't mention that before, but that was adopted in the Commerce Committee. And I would appreciate members' support on the bill.
Is there discussion on Senate File 2930? There being no discussion, Senator Scheid has moved that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2930 be recommended to pass. That's 2930 as amended. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the bill is recommended to pass. The committee has before it now number 56 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 3775. The chair recognizes Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise that Senate File 3775 be recommended to pass.
Senator Dahl, on that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is a paint stewardship demonstration project that Minnesota has the ability to take part in, and actually be the first state to actually take part in this project. It's actually the product of about 10 years of work. Not quite that much, but I think it's like about 5 years of work here that they've been working on a national level to bring manufacturers of paint, retailers together to find a way to recycle our paint in an environmentally friendly way. Leftover paint, and when we talk about paint, we're only talking about the architectural coatings. It's basically for your interiors and exteriors that are used in a lot of the residential commercial settings, but not for, you know, products. And currently, the recycling of this leftover paint costs Minnesota counties approximately $5 million per year to collect, reuse, and recycle. The product stewardship means that all parties involved with the design, production, sale, and use of a product take responsibility for all the environmental impacts of the product. In 2002, Minnesota joined the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the states and local governments including California, Washington, Iowa, Oregon, and paint producers, retailers, recyclers, and many others in a national product stewardship dialogue to solve the issue of government funding of leftover paint management. And in 2007, the paint industry agreed with the National Paint Coatings Association to lead in the creation of a national paint management system in partnership with government and the paint retailers. Now, the system is patterned after an existing and successful program in Canada. Minnesota was chosen to demonstrate a statewide paint management system to work out the nuances in preparation for a national rollout. This paint stewardship demonstration project was the full support of the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, the Association of Minnesota Counties, and other Minnesota governmental representatives. Mr. Chair, to get this bill in, the language that we need it finally is, I do have an A6 amendment I'd like to offer at this time.
The Secretary will report the A6 amendment.
Senator Dahl moves to amend Senate File 3775 as follows. Page 2, delete lines 9 to 11 and insert. This is Amendment A-6.
Senator Dahl, on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What this, just some fine-tuning on this, the language, and with all the parties that were involved here, we wanted to make sure everyone was on the same page. And what we're changing here is that on line, page 2, we're deleting lines 9 and 11, inserting language that all architectural paint sold in Minnesota shall include a consumer paint stewardship fee in its final retail price. And we're changing the line 21 of page 2 from $1 down to 50 cents. And on line 22, we're removing the language point of purchase material and instead inserting that the materials, get down to the line itself. Materials shall be provided to the consumer in a manner that is designed to ensure that consumers are made aware that a consumer paint stewardship fee has been included in the final sales price by the manufacturer or the representatives of the manufacturer. Now, this fee then is used to offset the cost of the county for any paint that they're not able to recycle on their, or they need to recycle on their site. Most of the retailers that are involved with this are looking to use, most of the recycling would be done through the retailers, and they're already beginning to make plans on collecting that unused paint. If all goes well, then with this pilot project, we'd be looking at a savings of close to $5 million that the counties now have to pay to recycle those materials. I would appreciate your support. I guess the one thing that one main reason why we need to have this legislation through here is that some of the activities that will be going on, or would be considered by some possibly as anti-competitive by our statutes, and we wanted to make sure that we could move forward without there being any questions regarding the conduct that's allowed under these for this program. Appreciate your support, and I'll stand for any questions.
Is there a discussion on the A6 amendment? Senator Senjum on the A6 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Dahl yield.
He will yield.
Senator Dahl, I'm trying to understand this bill a little bit. And I live in a county where there is a recycling program, including for paint. And I don't know if that's true generally around Minnesota or not, but I'm going to kind of assume that it is. And so when we have leftover paint, we can take it to the facility and we pay to get rid of it, which sounds somewhat fair. But on this bill, it would seem like every gallon of paint, regardless, would have now a 50-cent fee on it for recycling, even though, in fact, in many cases, most of those gallons are going to go on the side of a house or on the wall of a house or somewhere. So it seems to me we're paying a recycling fee in many cases, probably the majority cases, on a gallon of paint that is going to be applied to the wall. And so I can understand taking my leftovers out and paying for them, but I can't understand paying a fee on a gallon of paint that's going to entirely be used up. So help me if you could.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Senjum, this fee is something that they're going to impose, I think, regardless. So they're moving forward on it, on this particular project. It'll be labeled on. One of the ways that has been discussed is just putting a sticker on the can that's included in the price of the gallon of paint. But my understanding is that the retailers will be putting this forward regardless. They're using this. Why it's here in this body is because they want to use Minnesota as the pilot project, and because of some of our anti-competitive statutes, we want to give them the approval that we can go forward on it. But they want to move forward with this project regardless if it's started in Minnesota or someplace else, and that fee is something that will be included in their gallon of paint.
Is there a further discussion on the A6 amendment? Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, would Senator Dahl yield?
He will yield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is regards to, I see that it lists architectural paints, but there's a number of architectural paints that are used in the trucking industry because it's a cheaper paint, so it may be used on a semi-trailer or something like that. So what I'm wondering is there going to be some kind of a rebate form or like a tax exemption for commercial or automotive use that would still pay this fee, but yet it wouldn't be really used as architectural paint?
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olsen, if they purchase architectural coatings or architectural paint, then they will have this fee. At this time, there's no rebate form that's considered. I mean, that's possibly something that could be considered as they work through this pilot project. But paints, coatings that are typically designed for, say, a vehicle or other types of products that are being made, those types of paints are not included. This is the stuff that you'd be using for interior walls or exterior wall applications, things of that sort.
Is there further discussion on the A6 amendment? Senator Dahl has moved adoption of the A6 amendment. We'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of adopting the amendment signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the amendment's adopted. Discussion on Senate File 3775 as amended. There being no further discussion, Senator Dahl renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3775 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye. Opposed? Nay. The motion prevails and the bill is recommended to pass. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee do now rise and report.
Senator Pogemiller has moved that the committee do now rise and report. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
On Senator Pogemiller's motion, all those in favor indicate by saying aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Senate's in order.
Thank
Senator
you.
Pogemiller.
Mr. President, members, we're going to recess to just receive. We're waiting for the budget conference committee to come back from the House. So we're done for today. But we'll need a skeleton crew to come back, and then we'll appoint the budget conference committee. So I would stand for announcements of Senate interest.
Announcements of Senate interest. Announcements of Senate interest. Senator Latz.
Members, the Bridge Compensation Conference Committee will meet immediately following recess here in room 237 on the Senate members. Thank you.
Further announcements of Senate interests. Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the Economic Development Budget Division who are interested in going on the tour of the University of Minnesota, the bus will be leaving out front in about 15 minutes.
Further announcements of Senate interest. Senator Pogamiller, I don't...
Okay, then, Mr. President, members, we'll come back on Thursday at 11, but there'll be a recess now to the call of the chair just to accept the House committee report. So I would move to recess. So just a skeleton crew. Members don't have to come mm-hmm. back to the floor today. Otherwise, Thursday at 11. So, Mr. President, I'd recess to the call of the chair.
And Senator Pogamiller, that will be to receive a message from the House. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President and members, Senator Limmer isn't in here right now, I don't think, but if you are not aware, members, a fellow senator lost his mother on Friday, and that is Senator Limmer. And so, Senator Limmer, here you are. Senator Limmer, on behalf of, I think, obviously I know all senators, we express to you our deepest sympathy and best thoughts. And with that, I wonder if the Senate might rise for just a brief moment and reflect not only on certainly Senator Limmer, but certainly his mother's life.
Senator, rise in respect. Thank you, members. On Senator Pogamiller's motion to recess to the call of the chair, all those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The Senate is in recess.
The Senate will come to order. Senator Pogamiller.
Madam President, are there messages from the House?
We'll revert to messages from the House. Secretary will read the message.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File Number 1812, a bill for an act relating to the financing, organization, and operation of state government. The House respectfully requests that a conference committee of 5 members be appointed thereon. Representatives Carlson, Murphy M., Wagenius, Rukavina, and Osment have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File 1812 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with the request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Senator Pogamiller.
Madam President, on behalf of Senator Cohen, I'd like to move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File 1812, and that a conference committee of 5 members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
All in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The motion prevails.
Madam President.
Senator Pogamiller.
I'd like a brief recess for the purpose of appointing a conference committee.
Senate is in recess. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Senate's in recess. Senate will come to order. Senator Pogemiller.
Madam President, is there a privilege report at the desk?
There is. Secretary will read the privilege report.
Senator Pogemiller from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on House File Number 1812, Senators Cohen, Tomasoni, Fredrickson, Betzold, and Higgins. Senator Pogemiller moved that the foregoing appointments be approved.
All in favor of the Pogemiller signify by saying aye. Opposed, say nay. The motion is adopted. The motion prevails.
Madam President, I'm going to move to adjourn. Are there any excuses or announcements?
Without objection, the following senators are excused. Stump all day, Olson M, 1 to 1:45 p.m., Ortman, 1 to 1:45 p.m., Senjum, 1:15 to 1:45 p.m., Tomasoni, 1 to 2:40 p.m., Larson, from 2 p.m. to the end of session, Saltzman, from 2:15 to 2:55 p.m.
Madam President, I would move the Senate adjourn till Thursday, April 10th, 11 a.m.
All in favor, say aye. Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The Senate is adjourned.